A lot of companies and sales leaders think that marketing is the band-aid that can fix our problems. And a lot of marketers think that budget is the band-aid that can fix our problems. That if we had more money and we had more budget and resources, this wouldn't be an issue. We'd have enough leads and enough sales and enough opportunities. What are we actually doing? How are we actually contributing? The Bible, it talks about being a good steward with a little so that you can get a lot. And I think the same applies here, that you can't just grab a bunch of money and hope that you can do better marketing. You know, the best marketing I've seen in the world, it doesn't require a big budget or a big team. And so really be mindful of how are you using your resources.
Welcome to Aligned, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode of Aligned, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with marketing consultant Tim Parkin to discuss the importance of processes for marketing and how to use them when aligning your sales and marketing teams. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Hello. Today, I want to tell you what is at stake. So today's at stake $1 trillion. In the U.S. alone, marketing and sales teams waste $1 trillion due to a lack of coordination. So we brought to the table for you, the C-suite executives who are looking for practical, implementable, repeatable insights to break through those barriers that are holding back your sales and marketing performance, we brought to the table Tim Parkin from Parkin Consulting. Tim's a consultant, advisor, speaker, author. He roots around in the world of the Fortune 500, and he can't tell us who they are. He won't even tell me. It's killing me. But it's about a 50-50 mix of B2B and B2C. So we are looking forward today to learn about your insights, Tim, as you've helped break through and have some significant improvements, how you're working with that middle market space and that large Fortune 500 space. So let's start there. Tim, welcome.
Thank you, Sean. I'm excited to be here and excited to dive into this. And I think the $1 trillion is the minimum here. I think there's a lot more at stake, and it's a much more significant number than we really want to think about.
Oh man, everybody has a personal number, right? So, I mean, think about you as you're listening. What if you could close 10% more of your deals? What would that be worth to you? If you could eliminate 30-40% of the waste of your sales and marketing time, if you could reach that highest value, hardest to reach prospect, what would the value be for that company? So that's your personal number. $1 trillion is kind of this obtuse number, but there's a personal number in this for everybody. So let's start. Tim, what's your biggest professional win?
It's a fascinating question, Sean. I love this so much because I'll tell you a story. I was with a client of mine, a CMO. We were walking down in his hometown. I was visiting him and he's showing me around town at night. We're walking down and he starts asking me all these questions about, you know, what do you think about this? And how'd you learn that? And where'd you go to school? And you could see the expression on his face. I'm an advisor to this company, advisor to him. And you can see the expression on his face as he starts to realize, I have no experience in marketing. I didn't go to school for marketing. I didn't have a job in marketing. Yet here I am, an advisor to some of the largest brands in the world on marketing and with marketing teams and helping them go to a new level. And so for me, that's my biggest professional win is the ability to take my past and define this path that, you know, not only do I really love what I do, I happen to be really good at it, and I enjoy every day being able to do this. So I'm extremely blessed, extremely grateful, but it's been a journey, I'll say. We can talk about that, you know, where I came from and where I am now. It's wonderful and I love every minute of it.
Yeah, well, I'd love to hear that. What is the most important kind of detail from your past? It doesn't even have to be tawdry. It can just be like the proudest moment, right?
Yeah. Well, I grew up, you know, my dad showed me magic at an early age and I was fascinated by magic. And I thought, I want to be a magician. You know, this sounds awesome. But I realized quickly you work, you know, nights and weekends as a magician. That's when all the parties and dinners are, right?
Right.
So I didn't want to do that. So I got into technology and I was doing technology software development. And I love that. But again, I thought I'd go into video game design development. And I have a degree in that actually. But with that, you know, you're working long hours. So fast forward, I realized that all these companies I was building software for didn't have a technology problem. They had a marketing problem. No one could discover them. No one knew what they did. No one knew why they should work with them. And so I combined magic and technology, and that's marketing.
I love that. So I think we believe is that behavioral science is the foundation upon which marketing stands. And I mean, process is not magic, but process has a lot to do. And my bet is, I don't know anything really about the art of magic. I'm fascinated by it. I love watching, you know, like how the brain works and how as marketers, really, you can guide the brain to see things and maybe not see things. And, you know, like anything in business, you can use any skill for good or for evil, right?
Yes.
So magic is kind of a little scary, but you know, I think there's a lot to process. Is there an alignment between marketing, the process of marketing, and how that ties into strategy for sales and strategy for pipeline management? And talk to me about how all that works together.
Yeah, I think process is key. You know, a lot of people don't like to hear it when I tell them marketing is more process than creative. And I don't mean to say that there's no creativity in marketing, but what I mean is that marketing is mostly process. And of all the organizations I've worked with, the ones that struggle, the ones that can improve, are the ones that lack process. Mm-hmm. And so you need great people, you need to be creative, but if you don't have a strong foundational process to what you do, you can't excel and you can't reach the highest levels.
Is there a language of magic?
There are terminology and things like that, but it's interesting that you raise this kind of analogy because in magic, you know, a lot of it is storytelling. What's the story I want you to believe that's not true necessarily? And also, you talk about misdirection a little bit, some hints in there. And I see misdirection as more of the art of attention and guiding your attention rather than misdirecting you. Let's focus on the benefits that our product excels at. Let's focus on the narrative that we can control. And instead of saying, look away from the competition, say, look at us because there's a reason to do so. And also, I think magic behind the scenes is very process oriented. You know, I do the same trick for different audiences at a conference, client events, and it becomes routine for me because it's a process. But when you experience it for the first time, it seems like there's emotion and there's drama, and maybe I'm making a mistake is what it seems like. So there's very much a process. I think marketing is the same way. To our customers, to our clients, it seems new and an experience and uncertain, but behind the scenes, it needs to be rigorous, well-defined, a fine-tuned machine, and that's the process.
That's amazing. So I think, you know, again, we're going to use the word misdirection because you used it, and language. I think there's two observations. One, there's got to be a common language between sales and marketing. And that doesn't exist. Have you seen a misalignment between sales and marketing just because we talk different languages?
Oh, you know it. Absolutely. Everyone listening just knows that, right?
Right.
Sales and marketing speak two foreign languages and they can't understand each other at all.
How do you fix that? Like, what's the practical fix?
I think there's a couple ways to fix this. You know, one, as you're alluding to, is having a shared language and really meeting at the table together. You know, that's table stakes. You have to do that at least. But now we're seeing, you know, revenue operations, RevOps, play a really important role in joining sales and marketing together, which I think is really positive. You know, focusing on what really matters, which is revenue and results, you know, not on leads and MQLs and marketing metrics that don't matter. So I think those are two really solid ways. But the third is having a process of when an opportunity comes in, when an opportunity is generated, how do we all get together and rally behind that? Not just hand it off to sales, not throw it over the wall to sales, but marketing doesn't stop there. We need to continue to work together. And it's, I think, this diversion that we see sales and marketing as two different things rather than one and the same.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're preaching my song now. Can you preach a song? You're singing my song. You're leading the choir. There's some pithy thing to say there. Yeah, there's so much money at the late stage that gets lost because marketing doesn't know how to. Marketing doesn't even think about being equipped at the late stage. And what we do is we look at the behavioral science and say at the clothesline, at the finishing line, there are specific things that behavioral science points to. We call it centricity because it's based on the user's need, the buyer's need, not sales need, not marketing's need, but on the buyer. And at that point, there's specific things any person going through change, anybody buying thing needs. And that's so misdirection is the negative side, right? I'm making you look up here so you can do something down there. But the positive side of marketing is we see the same behavioral science says that when you're getting ready to buy something, if you think about it as an act of change, 80% of all people will look back at the past and say, you know what? I know the state that I'm in now, my bad behavior, the way things are, it's not perfect, but it's good enough. And I'm just not going to make the change because change takes effort. Change takes change, right? Takes a new way. It takes risk. It takes so that the often even and as sellers, we often say, we've got this better way to do it. I can't believe you're so dumb. You can't, but it's because the change is so hard. So properly used, directing someone's attention to a future state, behavior science says is very effective. So like what marketers you can contribute to the sales process by creating future state visuals future state scenarios, future state math, future state. You can help people at the closing line look to the future, direct their attention. So, that, you know, science, misdirection, magic, whatever we're going to call it, there's definitely process need, but that process has to be agreed upon by all parties. I love that you brought RevOps into it because RevOps should be more naturally more expert, kind of that middle of the funnel. What are the needs there? What's the business information? What and how do we get people on one page? And that's technology has an incredible role there. What have you seen the best example of that through your, you know, and the biggest wins? You have some significant wins listed in your Vita.
Absolutely. Well, I think you mentioned something about behavioral science, which I'll make really tangible here. And what I call the monkey bars method. And I've used this with all my clients and it's exactly what you described and it's transformative. And so I'll give an example and then I'll explain the methodology here. But I had a client who is a specialized school. It's a college of sorts and they teach a specific skill, a trade school, if you will. And they were doing well. They were getting a lot of leads, people asking to come to the school, acquiring for information. But we found a problem with their site. And so how it worked is you go to the homepage, you choose from one of the three programs, and you go to a page where you read about the program and you apply. And that was it. And through talking to the customers and through the administration people who talked to the customers, we realized, like you said, people had a lot of questions, and a lot of anxiety. And will this be good for me? Is it my future to do this training in school? And will I be able to develop and grow in this career path? And so we added a page to this journey. And in marketing, let's just stop there. You know, that's crazy, right? We want the shortest path possible, not the longest path. And so we added a page in the middle. And so you go to the homepage and choose a program. Then you'd go to this page that would talk about the career potential. If you embarked on this journey, what would your future look like? Like you said, Sean, this future pacing idea, painting a picture of the future and putting the customer in that picture and saying, look, here's how your life's going to be better. After that, you would continue to read about the actual program, what you learn, and then you would apply. And this doubled the conversion rate of leads coming into the school and made it so much easier for the administration people when they talked to these customers, these potential customers, they were already sold. They imagined themselves in this future state. And so that's what you can do with this behavioral psychology and understanding how customers think and act, which is that art of direction of attention. Mm. And so the monkey bars method essentially is if you imagine on the playground, these monkey bars, you know, where you grab on, you swing over, what happens is we often only have two bars to hold on to, one at the beginning and one at the end. And no one can reach that far. You know, I can't reach all the way across that. And so, of course, I can't make the change. But if you add those steps and make it one swing at a time, one step at a time, then you can reach there. And you know, this goes back to one of my favorite movies of all time, Bill Murray, you know, baby steps. What about Bob? You know, baby steps to the elevator, baby steps there. So you got to let the customer take baby steps, especially when you're changing behavior, because change is hard, as you said. Mm.
So monkey bars, I'm pitching centricity. Every marketer, every executive that's listening right now has met a marketer with a process and they've named it something clever.
That's right.
How do you sort through that? What separates good from the great?
Yeah, well, I think great process has five key attributes. And the first of those being, you got to write it down. If it's not documented, if it's not written down, it doesn't exist. You know, Edward Demings has a really great quote where he says, if you can't describe what you do as a process, then you don't know what you're doing. And I think it couldn't be more true. You know, most marketers, most organizations don't have a process written down. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think you need a visual, right? You need to be able to visualize this. I'm a very visual person. So it's not enough to just write it down as an SOP. You need to have a visual that says this box leads to that box, which then goes to this box, et cetera. It helps a lot. And then you can get everyone together and point to it and say, here's a problem in this part. You know, what do we do about that? The third thing, though, is you need to share this process and communicate it with the team. A process is useless if nobody knows what the process is, right? If you know, it doesn't matter. But the whole team has to know. Everybody who's going to interface with the process has to know. And then fourth, you need to measure the process. You need to have some metrics around this. If you can't measure it, then who cares? You know, and you can't improve it until you can measure it, which leads me to the fifth and final, which is you need to regularly review your processes and say, how are they doing? Are they serving us? Where can we improve them? And do we need to adjust them? And so it's not enough to have process and to document it and to visualize it and to measure it, but you have to improve it as well.
Whether you use a CRM, marketing automation, advertising platforms, or anything else, keeping track of your current marketing technology can be challenging. And if you need assistance sorting through your existing tech stack, Fitzmartin's MarTech Audit is here to help. Fitzmartin will audit your organization's currently utilized technology based on 7 categories, analyzing how your organization's tech components are used to see if you are allocating the proper funding to each criterion. The result? It delivers robust ROI savings through reduced tech fees, recommendations for future technology, and more time for your marketers to do their jobs. For more information, check out our show notes or visit fitzmartin.com.
So successful CMOs, I'm guessing, going to riff on your measurement step four. You know, they can connect the dots between marketing investments to business value. And at the same time, I'm reading a CMO study of the top of the mind concerns. And 50% of CMOs say they have an inability to measure and monitor effectiveness. How do you connect these dots? How do you come to the executive team and be treated seriously like an executive? Measurement. And to get the resources, because my follow-up question is going to be, how do I get the right resources? Because most CMOs don't think they have the right resources. Maybe they don't connect the dots between they can't measure it and don't, I don't know. So let me simplify. Connecting the dots, measurement, most important measurement. What is it?
Revenue, easily. And we're often looking at the wrong metrics. You know, marketers love to look at metrics like click-through rate and traffic and even leads and things like that. But you know, we can't think that way anymore. In the past, it worked. But I think the other metric that's really important is activity, is the inputs. You know, if you think about a timeline, you can control the beginning of the timeline, what you do. You know, I can go and exercise every day. I can't control the output, the results. If I lose weight, if I get in shape, you know, that's dependent on my inputs. And in marketing, we often look at the outputs only and we forget about the inputs. And so we look at things like leads and traffic and, you know, sales opportunities, but we can control the inputs. And marketing teams tend to forget that because we're so overwhelmed and so busy with all the other demands and requests. But if we just increased our inputs in the places that mattered, we would have the outputs that we wanted. But too much of marketing is, dare I say, boring, repetitive, uninspired because we're being dictated to. And this goes to a deeper issue, which is that companies, and this is why CMO tenure is so short, companies treat marketing as an add-on. You know, we have a product, we have something, let's do some marketing. That's not how it works. Marketing isn't what you do, it's who you are. You look at Apple and Coca-Cola and Nike. These are not companies making products. These are marketing companies that happen to sell products. And that's a fundamental difference to, I think, how we need to look at marketing.
Revenue. I'm going to go to that. I'm going to put my suspicious of marketing hat on and say, you know, Tim, we're a B2B company. We sell a highly complex product. There's multiple decision makers. And you're telling me that marketing gets attribution for revenue? I'm in sales. I closed that deal. How could you? How dare you take attribution for revenue?
And the problem of marketing and sales begins. Yes, always. You know, it's funny because you can't sell something in a cave. You know, people are out there in the world, and today's buyers are more savvy than ever before. There's more information than ever before. And that does mean there's more noise than ever before. But a sales conversation doesn't exist in isolation. And I think this is what goes back to people. The exceptional people know this. You know, they know that sales is not something that just sales does. And the great marketers know that marketing is not something just marketers do. And this is why the two are one and the same. We have to see it that way, that we work together side by side, shoulder by shoulder. This isn't a marketing thing or a sales thing. And personally, I have some issues with this whole attribution conversation. I think a lot of people are looking at it from a narrow perspective and saying, you have to do dark social and that's, you know, the thing, but it can't be attributed. I think all of this, whether it can be attributed or not, doesn't matter. What matters is, are we getting the results and the revenue that we want? At the end of the day, who cares how we got there, right? As long as we know if we do X, Y will come. And a lot of that, unfortunately, is the art and science of marketing. There's some science and there's some art, and we have to be okay with that.
Yeah. And I think when you get to the art conversation, people might say that I'm cynical and I'm so sales forward thinking. And as an agency, we're huge believers in sales. We believe the right role of Fitzmartin is to support sales. And it's hard to argue that, but I, you know, the creatives will go, you're just cynical. You've forgotten. You don't care about great creative. Well, that's akin to saying, I don't care about good communication, because great creative should be great communication. And I would never say that you shouldn't communicate well. You know, if by great creative you mean it's going to hang in the Louvre, well, maybe that's not a fact, but maybe it is. Maybe that's great communication. I don't know. The goal is the revenue, right? That is the scorecard in business. I've yet to meet an executive that said, I just need you to win a bunch of awards, really. That's the goal here. So I want to spend money so you win. Anyway, I don't want to belabor that point. I think it's incredible. You know, and I think with CMOs lacking resources to deliver strategy, you know, Gartner did a study in 22 on marketing budgets. And I mean, over half of the people still think they lack in-house resources. You've dealt with in the biggest companies in the country, you've dealt with the cynical, I'll say CFO or CEO who just says, I just can't give you more resources. What's the best strategy for earning that trust, for proving it?
This is a huge challenge, especially with the people issue right now. Finding, retaining a great people, it's a big deal. I agree with the research that companies are lacking the resources that they need, both in terms of the skills and the support and the process, you know, and their strategy, frankly. Most marketing organizations don't have a marketing strategy. They have a bunch of tactics in their bag, and they think that if we put them all together somehow and mix them together, you know, that's a strategy, and that's not a strategy. And this is where, again, marketing needs to see at the table from the business perspective as well. But in terms of marketing, you know, budgets are being cut right now, and it's a big deal. You know, the economy is uncertain. And the question always is, how can we do more with less? And I think that that seems unrealistic to a lot of marketers, to a lot of CMOs, to a lot of people in business. But I don't think it is. You know, I think it's a really good exercise. And I've told some of my clients even, your budget just got cut. Imagine if it gets cut again. What would you do then? And think from that perspective, because really there's so much waste. There's wasted time and wasted activities and wasted resources. And we have to be thinking from that perspective always, not just when things are tight, that we're too lax and too accepting with the work that we're doing that doesn't generate impact and results. And so what I tell my clients is you need to prioritize ruthlessly, and not just prioritize, which most marketing organizations don't do well, but prioritize ruthlessly and be absolutely clear about this is what we will do, this is why we'll do it, and this is what we expect from it, and do nothing else. And I think if you can prioritize in that way, you'll have tremendous success regardless of the amount of resources that you have. But the final thing I'll say here is it all comes back to process. Hmm. Exceptional people, exceptional process is how you can get the most of what you have.
I had a CEO years ago handed my head to me because I was asking for budget. I was asking for resources to go to market because I knew we had the ability to impact this business's needs. And I forget what the ask was. I mean, it's $100,000. And the CEO finally said, you're not, you know, basically didn't say it this rudely, but you know, you're not paying attention. You're not listening. If I take that $100,000 and keep it in our cash, keep it as cash, I'm getting ready to be sold. That cash has a multiple on it that's going to double, triple. What you're saying is you want to throw that into the marketplace and maybe 18 months, 24 months later, you might have a ROI. Why in the world would I give you the cash? And I think I share that only to say, not that I'm a numbskull, though occasionally I can be. I say that, you know, you've got to, as a marketer, you've got to understand there's business strategies that go beyond marketing. You know, we have clients that are going through rapid growth that need cash for other things than marketing investment. So, you know, if you've got a strategic understanding of business, then you understand why is this thing for marketing might be to pull back on their budget because other aspects of the business have deeper need at the time. So be patient. Don't freak out.
Just be patient. I think it's a great point, Sean, because a lot of companies and sales leaders think that marketing is the Band-Aid that can fix our problems. And a lot of marketers think that budget is the Band-Aid that can fix our problems. That if we had more money and we had more budget and resources, this wouldn't be an issue. We'd have enough leads and enough sales and enough opportunities. And that's not the case, you know, and this is where we need to be rigorous and honest with ourselves about what are we actually doing? How are we actually contributing? And, you know, in the Bible, it talks about being a good steward with a little so that you can get a lot. And I think the same applies here, that you can't just grab a bunch of money and hope that you can do better marketing. You know, the best marketing in the world that I've seen doesn't rely on a big team or a big budget. I'll repeat that for the people in the back. You know, the best marketing I've seen in the world, it doesn't require a big budget or a big team. And I think often we conflate the two and we think that bigger teams and bigger budgets equal bigger results. And that's never the case, almost never the case. And so really be mindful of how are you using your resources? It matters a lot.
And I'll connect that to process. Since you're a process fan, I'm a process fan. If when we process, when we look at this, we do a sales barrier analysis. The sales barrier analysis uses our process. It marks the different steps people go through in the buyer's journey. You might say, Sean, that's called a pipeline. Yes, I know that. And the consumer decision journey, pipeline report, et cetera. If you start having to squeeze resources, we always say sell the people that are closest to the finish line.
Yes.
So many marketers say, well, let's go out and get more leads. Well, that's the farthest away from the finish line you can possibly be. So if you have a short-term cash problem, even if you're trying to build long-term value, either way, let's start by selling the middle of the funnel, people who know us, people who understand us,
yes.
Maybe people who know us and don't understand us, or most importantly, people who don't understand how we could impact them. And that's a great way to restrict your resources because the infrastructure, there's 80-some thousand agencies in America. I would challenge that 60,000 of them know how to throw money at the front of the pipeline. And
Sean, that's brilliant. And this is why you guys are so good at what you do. And that's prioritizing ruthlessly. You know, you have to work backwards. And what I teach my clients is what I call test-driven marketing, which is play in small bets and find what works and then double down on that. But that part of that relies on optimization, which I think is the number one missing thing in any organization, you know, sales or marketing, optimization. But in optimization, exactly what you're saying is the case. You don't optimize starting at the beginning of the process, even though you have the most volume there. You optimize at the end and work backwards because that's closest to revenue. You know, a 1% improvement at the end is transformative. A 1% improvement or a 10% improvement at the beginning means nothing. Yeah. And so absolutely working backwards, that is so fundamental and so key. And it's interesting that you raise that because almost nobody knows this. You know, it feels like the best kept secret in the world.
Yeah. We shouldn't tell anybody
this podcast.
Then.
Yeah, you'll know.
Tim, okay, you've been transformative in my point of view just today. I've learned so many things. But I want to know what's the most transformative thing that you have learned about sales and marketing recently?
I'll tell you two things, actually. One is that marketing is about people. And you guys know this better than most, but marketing is about people. It always has been. It always will be. And we seem to have forgotten that, especially today with technology and software and tracking and attribution and iOS 14 and, you know, also AI, all sorts of things. You know, forget it all. Marketing and sales is about people. And if you think about people and put people first, you know, the rest is all easy and comes naturally. The second thing that I think is massive, as I said, is optimization. You know, optimization, I'm a little bit biased. That's what I help my clients the most with, developing optimization programs. I mentioned test-driven marketing. If you're not optimizing, then you're not growing. And optimization creates windfalls. You don't only increase your conversion rate and your sales and your revenue, but you also increase profits. So if you're not optimizing, you have to be. But whether it's sales, whether it's marketing, whether it's any process that you have, take the time, invest the time to optimize.
Brilliant. Tim Parkin, TimParkin.com, or give him a ring, 407-499-0303. Tim, thank you so much for being here. Is there any other way you'd want people to contact us? I'm going to sign up for your weekly advice, even though I don't need one more email, but I think you've proven to me today. I need to listen to this. This is good stuff.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure talking with you. Yeah, I'm a connector, so I would love to hear from anybody and everybody. I'm on LinkedIn. I post daily there, so I'd love to connect with all of you. And if I can help, let me know.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Aligned, the podcast for executives of the emerging middle market businesses and middle market businesses that are looking for more levers to pull around sales and marketing to have breakthroughs in their revenue. Thank you for joining us again, Tim. Look forward to listeners seeing y'all or hearing from you next time.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitsmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.